You're listening to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast, a product of the Oregon Basketball Coaches Association. To learn more, visit our website at or.nhsbca.org. Welcome to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. I'm Derek Duman, OBCA Vice President and Boys Basketball Coach at West Albany High School. Today, I'm joined by Nick McWilliams. Coach, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Derek. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for spending time with us today. You know, usually, Coach, I give people credit to what school they're at. But as we talked about a little before, you've been kind of all over the place. So I should note, you're currently an assistant coach for the Silverton Boys program. But last head coaching job was at South Salem. So to start this off, can you give us a little bit about your basketball history and tell us about your journey as a basketball coach here in the state of Oregon?
Sure, be glad to. Well, I grew up in Albany, went to South Albany High School, and played three sports there. Ended up going to Lynn Bendick Community College for 2 years, played basketball there and baseball, actually, for 1 year. And then I went to Warner Pacific College, Portland, which is, if you don't know, it's an NAIA-level program. And I played 1 year, and then I had a knee surgery and missed my senior year, and then graduated with my teaching degree in 1979. I've been coaching, this will be my, well, if we have a season this year, it'll be 42 years. I just finished my 41st year last year. My first 28 years were with boys programs. 22 of those were head coaching experiences. And my first coaching experience was at Sandingham Christian High School, which is in Corvallis. And I had a two-year assistant coaching JV coach position at Roseburg High School, and then I went to Central High School as the head coach and was there two times. But I was there, the years kind of run together. I think it was 90 to 92, and then I moved to Forest Grove, and I was the coach there for 4 years. Went to Milwaukee High School for 2 years as the head coach. To Sprague High School for 4 years as the head coach. And then, went back to Central, coached there for 4 years. And then I switched over to girls basketball. And for the last 10 years of my head coaching, I was the head girls coach at South Salem. And I don't know if what you want me to tell about it. I can just kind of give you some different things. We were fortunate to have some pretty good success. And I'll just kind of sum it up. In the 22 years, the head coach had somewhere around 330 wins. I don't remember exactly. And in 10 years with the girls, almost 200 wins, including overall had three state titles, three third places, and then a 1/4th place. I've been around a long ways, always in the Mid-Willamette Valley, but along I-5 pretty much. But we've moved quite a bit, but we have actually lived here in Salem in the same house for the last 22 years. So.
Yeah, very cool, Coach. Thanks for sharing. Coach, can you talk about, you know, you noted the different high schools. You know, you were in some bigger schools, you know, Sprague, South Salem. But how would you compare that experience to kind of a bigger, more populated area to someplace like a Central and Forest Grove that's kind of like you're the only show in town? How are those coaching experiences different?
Well, they certainly were different. Central and like Silverton, where I'm at right now, is very similar. It's the, like you said, the only high school in town. And especially when you're winning, people really get behind it. You know, we played in front of packed houses pretty much every night, even on the road, because people wanted to see us play and that kind of thing. At Forest Grove, when I went there, the program was kind of down, but we were able to reach the playoffs 3 out of the 4 years that I was there, and we were the people went nuts. we packed the place out, so that was a lot of fun. And at Milwaukee High School, the same thing. We 1 year had a great team, and unfortunately matched up with I'm sure you probably remember Freddie Jones, but he was on Barlow, and we took second in our league, and then but matched up with the number four team out of their league, which ended up being Barlow because they had to forfeit like 4 or 5 games, and so they were ranked fourth in the state and fourth in their league, so which was kind of unfair, but we hosted a playoff game against them, and it just went back and forth. I think we lost by 6 or something like that. But, yeah, the crowds were incredible. When I coached boys at Sprague, you know, in the rivalry games, especially against South Salem, it was just incredible. You know, you're familiar with South Salem's gym, and it was packed down on both sides, you know, upper deck and everything. So, those are some great memories there. When I coached the girls at South Salem, even though we were very successful, we didn't draw as much as we did with the boys. And then I just think also in recent years, that, a lot of kids are finding other things to do instead of going to games, whereas it used to be that that's what everybody did. But anyway, so I've kind of been on both sides of that with the fans, and you know, having lots of people there, or maybe just having a just kind of an average crowd, but they're all a little different, but I'll just say that all of them were really good experiences.
Yeah, you talk about you were in the boys game for a long time, and then you made the jump to the girls game. What caused you to make that jump?
Well, a couple things. I had been in Salem we'd been living in Salem, and when I coached, we moved here when I took the Sprague job, and then I was out for a year and then came back and coached at Central, and kind of wanted to, I guess I got kind of tired of the drive a little bit, but my kids were all in school here in Salem, and so that was part of it. And the second one was my daughter, Katie, my youngest daughter. I knew was going to be a pretty good player, and they had offered me a job at South Salem, and I thought, well, this could turn out to be something really good. So kind of wanted to get back to Salem, and then opportunity to take over South Salem program and coach my daughter.
Yeah, you had the opportunity to coach your daughter, which is something that's pretty special, and not all high school coaches get to do. What was that experience like for you?
Well, for me, it was a great experience. You know, I do have 3 daughters, and all of them I coached as they were coming up. My oldest daughter, Allie, she played through the 9th grade at Sprague High School, and she's incidentally, I'll just talk a little bit about now if that's okay. She's a school psychologist in the Dallas School District, and she's married and had their first child about 5-6 weeks ago. So my wife Diane and I have our first grandchild as of about 5 weeks ago. And Lindsay, our middle daughter, played through the 8th grade, and she is now a media specialist over in Bozeman, Montana, and she's getting married in August. So, anyway, Katie, when I went to South Salem, she attended there. And so as far as the experience goes, it was extremely rewarding. I think it drew us closer together, you know, which – doesn't always happen. Sometimes, you know, they kind of push each other apart because it's such an intense game and, you know, a lot of pressures and things like that. And sometimes that can be difficult. But for the most part, it was very rewarding for me. And she played on our varsity for 4 years. And I feel like our relationship got better. And I also feel like that I began to rely more on her as because she has a coach's mind, and like I do, and so she became, in some ways, kind of like an assistant coach. And but we had some great experiences, and you know, we achieved the ultimate. We were able to together to win a state championship in 2015. But it was for me a great experience.
Yeah, how did you kind of balance that fine line of both being her dad and being her coach? Did you guys set up rules or guidelines, or was it ambiguous? You kind of just flowed in and out?
Well, I knew that it could be a struggle. I went to Brad Smith, who's a Hall of Fame coach from Oregon City, and he had coached his daughter, who was a really good player. And I got to know him a little bit, and I asked him what he did. And the main thing that stands out was that he said that when you get in the car to head home from practice or from a game or whatever, that just remember that she's your daughter. She's not your player. You're not her coach. I mean, you're her coach, but you're not her coach right then. And so don't talk about basketball on the way home. And for that matter, when you get home too. And I don't think I was perfect at that, but I did the best I could with that. And I think that really made things a lot easier for us. So, you have to kind of draw that line and, make sure that, she understands that you're both her coach and her dad, and there's an appropriate time to, take that role. And I think I did a pretty good job with it. She lives at home right now, and we really enjoy having her here. And she's kind of getting into her own coaching experiences now, and training and that kind of thing for basketball. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's great. How did you deal with coaching your daughter with the rest of your program, parents, coaches, et cetera? You know, I was a coach's kid as well, and I always felt like it was a tough line to follow, just how other people viewed it, right? That there could be this idea that you're favoring your daughter. Was there anything that you did within your program, that you talked with your parents about to help kind of get them to understand that you weren't just coaching your daughter, you were had the team's best interest at heart?
Yeah, I don't know specifically if I did. I tried more in my actions and conversations just to generally make sure that I was trying to make it as even as possible as far as how I treated people. I don't think the issue, like, of playing time was much because, you know, from her freshman year, Katie was one of our better players, and so that was not an issue. But still, I do remember there were, you know, people that kind of said, well, she's doing so well because her dad's, you know, always running plays for her or whatever. And those are kind of hard to deal with because they're difficult times. And even though you're trying to do the best for your team, not everybody necessarily looks at it that way. And so it was not always easy, but I think that trying to be careful not to be blatant in terms of, playing time and, spreading things around. And we did have a really good team. We had several good players. So, and all of them got a chance to show what they could do. And as a team, we were very successful. So, but I think that overall, I think it worked out pretty well. I don't remember it being a horrible situation, but I do remember there were a few times that there were some people that questioned what I was doing.
Yeah. What advice would you have for coaches high school coaches that get the experience and opportunity to coach their own kids?
Well, I think it depends on the situation. I think that if your kid is a really good player, I think in my situation, I felt like that was a benefit for me because she was going to help me be successful. And most people were not going to question the, you know, playing your own kid. But I don't know, it could be a little more difficult if, you know, if your kid is a pretty good player, but, you know, maybe in the same ballpark as some of the others on the team. I think that that could be something that brings on some conflict that you, I'm not sure if you want to really do that, you know. But I also think that I have seen a lot of times where the coach's kid was somebody who, you know, really was not a good player, but it was a great addition to the team and, you know, very supportive. And I think that's a good situation to have as well, where the playing time is not really an issue, but it's just someone who's a great person for the team. So I think it depends on the situation. So in those three scenarios, I think two of them are good, and the second one, or the third one, one of them where they're, you know, equal to an ability to a lot of kids on the team, I think that can be quite a struggle.
Yeah. Coach, you talked about, you know, some of those teams you had, including the one with your daughter. You guys won back-to-back state titles, 2015, 2016. And you've gotten to coach some really good players throughout your career. What is it like, and maybe how is it different to coach those really talented kids, you know, that go on to play Division I hoops? How is coaching them different than, say, your typical or average high school basketball player?
Well, just to give a little sense of history, you know, I only coached one before those three girls that I had at South Salem. I only coached one Division I player, and that was Dan Schneider at Forest Grove, and he was a walk-on player at Northern Arizona. So I didn't have any experience. I coached a lot of good players, but not ones that were, you know, really elite players. And then all of a sudden we had three of them, you know, at South Salem. And so I think that the main thing that I thought of that's important is you need to balance the structure that you have with allowing them to play. I think if I'd been too structured with them, you know, that would may have been difficult because those special players, you have to give them a little extra latitude to, you know, make plays that other people can't. And so letting them play a little bit along with being having some structure so that, you know, everybody understands what we're doing, defining roles. My last year that I coached, I had Avena Westbrook, who was not only my best player, but the best player in the state and one of the best in the country. I had another player that was a good shooter, Danny Harley. And then the other ones were totally just role players, and they accepted those roles. And then the kids that were on the bench that played a little bit or didn't play at all, they accepted those roles too. And to be honest, that was one of my more enjoyable years ever of coaching. We took third, and but I felt like that with the exception of a couple of great players, we were pretty average. And but we didn't have any conflicts. Everybody was on the same page, and I give a lot of credit to the kids for accepting those roles. And Avena was a really good leader for us too, and Danny as well. So it was, if you have really good kids, individuals and stuff, that makes a huge difference. And but going back to your original question, yeah, I mean, it's great to have great players that, you know, run a play and hey, they're going to make a good play out of it. And it makes us as coaches look a lot better than we really are.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, Coach, you know, you bring up roles, and it sounds like you had that buy-in in those last couple of years at South Salem. What does that look like? I mean, how does that conversation go? Because I'm sure you've had teams where it was tough to get kids to buy into roles, and I would say it's probably easier when you're winning to get kids to buy into roles, right? So, you know, you've had a lot of experience, coached all over. I mean, what have you learned in terms of helping get kids to buy into their role to help their team and not try to, you know, not have everybody try to be the shooter or the scorer, et cetera?
Right. I think communication obviously is important. I think that communicating in a parent meeting with the parents about how you make decisions, you know, about you're trying to make decisions that are best for the program first, and then you try to make them what's best for the different teams and individuals, and so try to communicate that way. Having periodic meetings with the kids, you know, where tell them, hey, where they stack up and where are the you know, what positions they'll be playing, and you know, discussing what their role is and what they can do to improve their minutes. And I also talk about how to earn minutes. You earn those in practice and also in that game performance. And so it's a combination of that. And that's where you have a lot of the problems, because, you know, parents might see a kid do a pretty good job in a game, but they wonder why they're not playing more. But, you know, as coaches, we see them every day in practice, and so we see what they're what they're able to do day by day. And sometimes parents don't understand the role part. Sometimes they think that it's my kid and I want my kid to be the scorer on the team. And maybe that's not their best role for this particular team. So sometimes we try to communicate that to parents, but it's difficult because if they've already got their mind set on that, it's hard to communicate that. But trying to communicate as best you can, I think is a key thing. And then just let them know that, the other thing is just make sure that when you talk to the kid about their role, that you tell them to make sure you go home and tell your parents what we talked about, so that they have a good understanding of what the coach wants for the kid. And I think that's a combination of those things usually worked well, but you're going to have problems. As a coach, you have to deal with parents, and you've got to deal with playing time. Those are the two big things, the two P's, I always call them. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned, you know, periodic meetings. How often would you have those meetings with players?
Well, I would like to – I usually have them at the beginning of the year, you know, after we practice for a couple of weeks when I'm getting ready to play games, and then try to revisit it if you can during the Christmas break, and then once again look at it toward the end of the season as you're heading into the playoffs and so on. I didn't always do it that way. Necessarily always say that's when I'm going to do it, but it's really hard to do it too often because you're doing game planning and you know, like you and I were teachers too, and we're putting time into that, and there's just not all the time to be able to do that. But I would say those are the three main times that we tried to have those meetings.
Yeah. All right, good stuff, Coach. We're going to take a little break. When we return, we'll have more from Coach McWilliams right after this on the Orient Basketball Coaches Podcast.
The start of school means it's time to sign up or renew your Orient Basketball Coaches Association membership. OBCA membership includes access to exclusive resources that help personalize instruction, understand players' mindsets, and maximize the impact of your practices. Members also receive access to the OBCA mentoring program and have a voice in improving the game at the state level. Membership starts at just $15 a year. Register online today at or.nhsbca.org.
Welcome back to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Derek Duman here with Coach Nick McWilliams. Coach, you've had a long, very successful coaching career, 500-plus wins. You mentioned over 40 years in the game. When you look back on your career, what are some of the things that you're most proud of?
Well, I think probably the number one thing is that a lot of the players I coach, I still see, you know, they, if they're close by, you know, they'll come by and say hi. I run into them at, you know, different events. And, you know, in Salem, we have this big three-on-three tournament, the Hoopla, which I'm sure you're familiar with. You know, I like going down there. All three of my daughters were involved there, and they all had at least one, you know, championship there, which was kind of fun that they all shared that. But you know, now I just go down there and watch, and I see all kinds of people that I know, and part of what I see is former players, and sometimes they come by, you know, to practice or school or whatever, and I get a chance to see them. That's really rewarding to me. I think that, you know, obviously I've been blessed with success of the teams I've coached, but what you really remember besides that is the kids that you get to work with and find out how they're doing, how successful they've been. And when they say that, hey, it was a great experience to, you know, to play high school basketball, and I've used some of the things that that we learned in basketball in my life as a, you know, a dad or a mom or a, you know, in my work or whatever. Those are, I think, the most rewarding things. In terms of rewards, you know, I'm thankful that Katie is a good friend. You know, she's not just my daughter, but we have a good relationship, and so I'm thankful for that. And then just in terms of basketball, one of the things I'm most proud of is that we won at South Salem, we won 5 straight league championships, and we won 58 straight league games. And, you know, we were really good, and maybe you'd say we should have won all those 58 games. I guess what I liked more than anything was that we were consistent. We didn't take games off. Our preparation was good. You know, as far as game planning, our preparation was good in terms of mentally and being ready to play. And, you know, I just really liked that consistency and the fact that we didn't have letdowns. And so I think those three things are what stand out as far as what I'm most proud of.
Yeah, Coach, you talk about that consistency. I think, you know, it's really hard, you know, we know as coaches to win, period.
Right.
But then to win consistently is even harder, right? To win one state championship is really hard. You know, to come back and win a second one is even harder. Was there anything that you did as a coach to kind of help build that consistency, keep kids focused on what they needed to do to maintain that success?
Well, yeah. I mean, every time we won, we talked about that, you know, we need to continue with, you know, we talk about what we did to make to win this one. You know, we prepared, and we also talked about, you know, after a while, we had a target on our back every game. I mean, everybody wanted to beat us, and we just kept saying, hey, you know, this would make their season if they could beat us, and we've got to make sure we step up and play our best so that that doesn't happen. And the kids really bought into that. I think that they had a lot of pride in being successful and wanting to, you know, fulfill the goal of winning the league championship first and then going from there. And so I think after a while it becomes some of this part of your program. You emphasize working hard every day in practice, and, you know, like every coach says, you play the game like you practice, and it's so true. But I think that our effort in practice matched our effort in the games, and when you have some success and you keep harping on that, I think it really happens for you. So that's what we tried to do, and I think it worked for us.
Looking back, I would say, or I guess my question is, if you look back at your younger self, you got your first head coaching job, what advice would you give to your younger self that's just about to start their career?
Well, I think that you need to realize that there are lots of highs and lows in the game of basketball, or for that matter, any game. And I just know that when I was first coaching, that, you know, if we lost, it would bug me for days. You know, I couldn't sleep and that kind of thing. And then sometimes you get a big win and you have a hard time coming down from that. And so you're not ready for the next time. And I just think that as a young coach, the more that you can be kind of on an even keel and don't take the losses too hard, don't make the wins too big that you can't bounce back from them, I think that naturally happens. You do a better job of that as you get older, but even when you're a younger coach, if you can remind yourself that, hey, there's going to be another game in a couple days. I guess one of the things I always liked was, you know, playing in tournaments where if you lost, you know, you get a chance to get back out there again the next day or whatever. And that helped to kind of focus me on the next task. I think that would be the best advice I would give myself, because I know that there were times where when I was a younger coach, I got too far up or down based on the result of the game. And, you know, I've coached, gosh, over 800 games, I think, as a head coach, and several hundred more as an assistant. And so when you're talking about 1,000 games, I mean, if you try to make one too important, then, you know, that's probably not a good idea.
Good perspective. That's a good perspective. you know, how has the game changed over the 40-plus years of your coaching? And I guess specifically, how has coaching the game changed from when you started to now?
Well, I think there are a lot of things. You know, I started coaching actually in about 1980 is when I started. And back in those days, you know, UCLA was kind of like the kingpin of college basketball. And everybody kind of copied what they did. You know, they ran the, UCLA high post offense, and they ran their 2-2-1 press, and everybody tried to do that because they just figured that, hey, if it works for them, it'll work for us. And then Bobby Knight and Mike Krzyzewski came on with the motion offense, and so everybody was running that. Flex offense kind of was there for a while, and now you have, you know, the dribble drive, read and react, and Princeton offense. And, you know, it really does change a lot, because I think the game right now is a lot more, which I'm kind of more of a basketball purist, but I think the game is more dribble oriented as opposed to passing and screening and cutting and that kind of thing. And so I've really seen that. I also was coaching, and this really makes me look old now, but I was coaching when they brought the 3-point line in. So, I had been coaching about 5 years, I think, when they brought the 3-point line in, and that really changed the game. You know, if you shoot, you know, a 20-foot shot before there was a 3-point line, that wasn't necessarily considered a very good shot, but when you can get 3 points for it, then, you know, you, And I think the game was a lot more kind of post-oriented back in the day because, hey, get the ball 3 feet from the basket, you get 2 points for that. You know, you shoot a 20-footer, you still get 2 points. You know, get the ball inside a little bit more. And but then as the three-point line came in, I think that you know, the philosophies changed. And I really still, when that happened, still went to you know, the post game because now you can spread things out. People have to guard the three-point shot, but you could get your post open a little bit more. And but those are some of the things that I have seen and changes. And another thing change-wise would be in scouting. People will probably laugh when they hear this unless they study it or, you know, are as old as I am. But scouting, you know, there were times where they wouldn't let us take a camera into a game. Mm-hmm. You know, the people would be at the door and say, no, you can't film the game. Well, you know, you could watch the game and take notes. That's how a lot of coaches did it. But, you know, the filming in that in those days was not as much. I really felt like for a while that before, you know, huddle came in and everybody was exchanging films and so on, as that was starting to come in, even when I was at South Salem, I would try to feel like that I wanted to outwork the other people. And I was going to go out and film my own games and you know, not share film necessarily. Because I didn't want somebody else to not have to work as hard as I did. And nowadays, pretty much everybody shares the film, so which I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but it's certainly a big change, and especially from the days when you sometimes they wouldn't even let you film. So, but those are some of the ones that stand out as far as changing over the last 40 years.
Yeah. Have you noticed a difference in kids at all and how you coach them? I know, you know, sometimes kids have a hard time distinguishing between coaching and criticism. And, you know, maybe they get disappointed or upset after receiving some feedback. Has that changed at all in your 40 years? And if so, how?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, I think it has, but it's more related to the coaching that kids get outside of school, you know, the club teams and the individual coaches and things like that, because, you know, they don't necessarily, you know, on the club teams, and my daughter played on club teams and had a great experience with all that, but sometimes you feel like you're kind of working against them because you do certain things a certain way and they do it a certain way, and sometimes a kid, you know, it's kind of torn. You know, they don't know for sure which way to go. It's difficult because they're hearing one thing from a coach and another from their club coach. And, excuse me. So I think that's kind of one of the things that's more difficult in terms of differences there. I think kids are pretty much kids, except now you have more that are getting influenced by the club programs. You know, when I first started, there was very little club stuff. You know, when I coached at Sprague, they had what they called the BCI, which I don't know if you would have remembered any of that, but a couple of my players played on that, and they would, you know, travel and stuff. But now, you know, there's those club programs all over the place, and I think it helps kids. But when they come back to the program, sometimes, you know, they develop some habits that you would not have taught them. And so I think there's a little more of that right now than there was, especially 25, 30 years ago. But for the most part, I think kids are kids, and parents are parents for that matter. So I don't think there's been a huge change.
Yeah. Can you talk about a little bit, Coach, you know, now that you've retired from being a head coach, but you're still very active, you're on the OBCA board, but you're also serving an assistant coach with Silverton. How is being an assistant different from being a head coach?
Well, it's quite a bit different, and I welcome all of it right now, because when I got out as a head coach, I wanted to, you know, go watch Katie play, and I didn't want to put as much time into it. And, you know, I think, you know, we haven't really touched on this, but I think it does take more time now to be a head coach than it did maybe 20, 25 years ago. But in this case, there's less responsibility. Jamie McCarty, who's the coach I work for at Silverton, does a great job running the program. And I feel like that my role is more of to, you know, provide, you know, just help for individual kids and preparation for games in terms of scouting and kind of just another set of eyes. You know, he does a great job with, and we have, you know, we agree with in terms of the things that we want to accomplish as coaches. Excuse me. And so I think that I can just give advice and let him make those decisions. And it helps me to sleep better at night than I did as a head coach, for sure. Anyway, I think that I'm much more of an observer now. You know, Jamie runs pretty much the practice, you know, and my role is more to, you know, help with different drills, but also to kind of be another set of eyes and then tell him, hey, or he'll ask me, oh, what are you seeing? And what do you think we should do in this situation? And so that's kind of the job as an assistant coach that I have. And I really think it's good. I like it this way.
Yeah. How is your relationship with players different as an assistant coach? Do you feel like you're able to connect with them more, goof around with them more? How is that different than being the head guy?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, you can be more of the good cop guy, I guess, when you're an assistant coach, because, you know, generally the head coach is going to be the one that's, you know, laying things on the line as far as how things are going to be. And so I feel like I can get a little closer to the players than I used to, just because I'm not so concerned about the other parts of the game. And, you know, I have some of these kids in class, and I feel like I can get to know them as individuals and things outside of basketball, like you said, joke around with them and that kind of thing. So I think an assistant coach has that advantage, and you don't have to be the tough guy all the time. It allows you to be more of a little more buddy-buddy with them, or maybe like a mentor, where you feel like they feel like they can talk to you and you can talk to them, and there's no threats involved with that. And so I think, assistant coaches can definitely help in that way.
Yeah, when you jumped back, you know, from South Carolina on the girls, and you jumped to Silverton on the boys' side, you know, how is that different? I mean, how is coaching girls, I guess, different than coaching boys? And was there any sort of shell shock or, oh, that's right, when I'm coaching boys, it works a little bit differently? Was there any of that?
Well, yeah, there was some of that. I think that I remember the first few weeks just thinking about how it's so much more athletic, faster, and things like that, even though, you know, I got to coach some of the faster, more athletic girls in the state. And then as Katie started playing at the Pac-12 level, you know, I saw some pretty high quality basketball being played, but still, the athleticism was, you know, was quite a bit different. And I think people always ask me what the differences between coaching girls and boys, and the first thing that I remember was that girls were, until I got to have people like Avina, Jordan Woodvine, and Katie, you know, they're pretty literal. You know, like if you're going to try to run a play, they think the play has to be run just like that, you know, whereas the guys will kind of find a way to, you know, if this is open, I can have the freedom to do this. And you know, I think the girls were mostly more pleasers, you know, they wanted to make sure they did everything right and so on. And I was trying to teach them that, you know, if you got a chance to make a play here, you've got some options here. You don't have to do, you know, if you pass here, you don't always have to screen here. You can cut or whatever. And so that's one thing that was different. In my experience, you have to be much more encouraging with girls. Otherwise, they kind of think that you don't like them, or, and they also think that you don't think they're capable of doing what you want them to do. And you know, I think you need to be encouraging with boys, but I think that boys kind of are expecting that, hey, they're going to get yelled at by the coach or whatever, and not to take it personally. And my early experience with the girls was more that I had to be careful what I said, because sometimes they did take things too personally. So I don't know if I'm getting off track there a little bit, but I think it's kind of an interesting thing. The people always want to know how is coaching girls different from boys. It is right. The same game. It's the same game, but because of the athleticism, speed of the game, you have to teach it a little bit differently.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Coach. We're going to take another break. We will return. Coach McWilliams will try to beat the shot clock here on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast.
Stay up to date with the Oregon Basketball Coaches Association on social media at facebook.com/OregonBCA or on Twitter at @OrHoopCoaches.
Welcome back to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. We're talking with Nick McWilliams. Coach, for my next set of questions, I'm going to put you up against the shot clock. I'm going to put 35 seconds on the timer and ask you some rapid-fire questions that will take hopefully 1 to 2 word answers. You're on the hot seat of sorts. And we're going to see how many questions we can get through in that 35 seconds. Sound good?
Yeah, sounds great.
All right. 35 seconds on the timer. We are starting now. Should Oregon High School basketball have a shot clock?
Yes, we should.
Should it be implemented at the sub-varsity level?
I think we start with the varsity level and then work from there.
You're up 3 points with less than 10 seconds. Do you foul?
That's a tough one. Yeah, I think you do. I think you have a better chance of winning if you foul.
What's your favorite way to guard on-ball screen?
We like to hedge hard and then recover.
Do you think the three-point line should be moved back?
No. In high school, it's a good spot.
How do you celebrate after a big win?
Well, usually go home and spend time with my wife. Sometimes go out somewhere and get, for pizza or ice cream or whatever.
Good. That's time, but I have my favorite one I like to ask coaches, which is, what's the one word officials would use to describe you?
Oh, well, it depends on if you're talking about now or 25, 30 years ago. I think that they thought of me as a fiery young coach, but now I'm pretty much the, Jamie, I don't need to yell much because Jamie takes care of all that. So.
Their opinion of you has gotten much better. Is that what you're saying, Coach? As you've
I think so.
Matured.
Yeah, but part of that's just because, I'm an assistant, and up through my last year as a head coach, I was pretty fiery because I wanted to win. But right now, that's not my main role.
Right. Absolutely. Well, good. Coach, I bring up this every interview we do, which is the shot clock. hot topic subject, both in Oregon and across the country. You had mentioned being in favor of the shot clock. Can you elaborate on why?
Well, I think that, you know, my experience with the shot clock goes to when Katie played club basketball, they always played with the shot clock. And we had a chance at South Salem to play in some big tournaments in Washington. They used the shot clock there. And I just really felt like that it was a better game, because you had to make more decisions that were pertinent to the game. And especially like, you know, late in a game, you can't stall like a lot of teams will. You know, you're not going to run a minute off the clock. You can't with a shot clock. But you still need to be able to, like if you're ahead, you want to run some time off and then get a quality shot. And I just really feel like that makes the game better. It makes you coach better. And if you have to coach better, then you have a better chance of improving the game. So I think that's one of the big things. I think the game is more interesting if it's played more at a faster pace. I'm not against trying to slow things down. I think when I was a younger coach, sometimes we did that because that was probably the best way for us to have a chance to win. But in terms of interest for the game, I talked earlier about, you know, the girls program sometimes not having a lot of fans there. Well, I think a faster-paced game is good. Also, it helps. I think the kids have to learn better skills, get more skills, and improve them to be able to play at that fast pace. And so that overall makes the game better too. So I just think overall it would be good for Oregon to have this. I think it would improve the quality of basketball and the interest level.
Yeah. Coach, how do you, or how did you, either now or in your career as a head coach, how did you go about choosing your leaders and team captains?
Oh, well, we usually would have a team vote, and because I want to see what the kids are saying, you know, because, you know, who I think the leaders are may be different than what the kids think. And so usually we would take a poll, and then we would sit down as a coaching staff and evaluate what they came up with. And generally it was very similar. I think that what the kids that they saw, leaders were the ones that we saw too, but sometimes you kind of wonder with the kids that they might pick out. But anyway, just a combination of what the kids see and what the coaching staff sees.
Did you give any sort of job responsibilities to your team captains or do any sort of leadership activities with them?
Nothing like specific, like, you know, like every year go over that. I never did that. I did every year kind of sit down with the kids and tell them, you know, what I thought was important for them to be able to do, but it was never never really planned, I guess. I think generally the leaders that we had knew how to lead to a certain extent, and then I would just kind of help them along. But I know sometimes they have like leadership seminars that kids go to. I think some of them may have done that, but it was nothing that I necessarily was organizing.
Yeah. Coach, how did you kind of build team chemistry in your programs, and do you have a favorite team bonding activity that you did?
Well, we had at South Salem and at Silverton now, and just about everywhere I've been, we've had team dinners. And I found that those were really good for the whole program because parents were involved with it, and And I think having parents involved with things like that is very good for your program. For that matter, having parents involved in, you know, in other things like maybe taking stats or filming or whatever, I think giving them involvement there where they're less likely to think about the issues of playing time and all that kind of stuff. But it was also really the team dinners were awesome for the players, you know, because besides the obvious good food, they would be laughing and joking and kind of, you know, having fun, and you get to hear a little bit of their funny stories and that kind of thing. And we also would have a Christmas party if we had time for that. A lot of times we're playing a tournament, so it's hard to squeeze that in. But those are things, I think, more so with the girls. I think they really liked that kind of stuff. And the guys did, too. But the guys were less likely to want to hang around together after that, whereas the girls, sometimes they would be, you know, spend a couple hours, you know, at the team dinner. And I think that really helped them to feel part of the team. And I think it went a long way for helping with our success.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite drill?
Yes, I do.
What do you got?
Well, it's called 4-on-4, 3-and-out. This is actually, I got this from Lute Olson when he was coaching in Arizona. And this is probably going 30 years ago. And I've used it in every program that I've been involved with. And I taught it to the kids at Silverton as well. And are you familiar with that drill? Or?
No, not really.
Okay. It's a good one. I'll try to do it quickly here. It works best if you have 12 players or more, and you play 4-on-4, and then you have a third group of four ready to come in. But the defensive four starts with 3 points, and in order to get out of the drill, they have to get down to zero. But it's not just a matter of, okay, they got to get 3 stops and they're out. They have to get down to zero. But if they don't get a stop, then you add on another point. You know, you never go above 3. Okay, so you start with 3, and let's say they get a stop, then they're down to 2, and then they get another stop, and they're down to 1. But then the next time they score, they're back to 2, and if they score again, they're back to 3. And so it's a very demanding drill because you got to stay in there until you get down to zero. And plus, you're bringing in a fresh offense every time. So you've got 4 against 4, same defense, a new fresh offense going against them. So it's a lot of stamina involved, conditioning for the defense, and kind of, you know, pulling together because they realize that you know, if we don't get stops, we're going to be here forever. And plus, it's game-like because, you know, hey, sometimes you got to get a stop, you know, or you got to get 3 stops or whatever. But the other benefit of it is that offensively, you know, you're teaching kids that, hey, you want to keep the defense in there. So you got to make sure you get a good shot and so on. And we started doing it where to help for scouting, like if the team used a lot of down screens, then we would start with a down screen. And so they had to fight through that. Excuse me. If they used back screens, then we would start with that entry and get some work on that, maybe cross screens or whatever. So we would kind of tweak the drill to help us prepare for the next team. And it got to be very competitive. You know, I don't care what you say. The kids hate being on defense for, you know, forever. So,
right.
But if you play great defense, you have a better chance of winning, and that's the whole idea there. And then the offensive part of it is good too. So it helps, you know, offensively, you value the possessions, and, you know, defensively, hey, as a team, we got to get a stop here. Mm-hmm. Love that drill.
I like it. Yeah, that's a good one. Coaches, we look to this season, which will be very different, probably the most interesting season that you've had, and that's saying something. You're talking about 42 years in the business. That's going to be a strange one. Do you have any advice for coaches as we start to plan for, you know, a shortened season, less preseason time? And do you have any ideas or thoughts to help as we prepare?
Well, yeah, it's, as long as I've coached, I've never had this experience, so I'm not really sure the best way for that. I can tell you what we did at Silverton back in the days. I'm trying to remember what month it was. I don't know about you, but I have a hard time telling what month it is because everything was always, you know, always geared around basketball season, and now we don't have a basketball season, so it's. But a few months ago, when we were able to get in the gym a little bit, you know, we tried working on, you know, some of our offensive stuff, you know, kind of break it down because that's all you could do. And, but I know Jamie took, like a lot of coaches did, came over to Idaho and played, you know, just to try to get ready there. I don't think we're going to have that opportunity when it comes to whatever, May or whatever, that we get started again, that we can do that. But I don't know. I guess just get as many, you know, reps in the gym. We try to encourage kids to work out wherever they can. And we haven't done this, but I've noticed Marshall has been having, like, team Zooms and things like that. And we haven't done any of that, but we haven't done any, like, outdoor workouts either, but I've seen some people doing that. So have you done that? Or?
Yeah, we did a few before the Christmas break. Yeah, we went outside and, you know, just basic skill development stuff and really just trying to provide opportunities for kids to do something. It feels like it's been our goal with all this.
Yeah, we did more of some indoor stuff when you could get like 10 kids in a gym or whatever. But like you're saying, I mean, it's preparing for the season, but it was more of this for the mental part of it for the kid, you know, being able to see their friend and be around them and stuff. And that's why, you know, athletics is so important for that purpose too. And anyway, I'm not giving you very many good ideas because, you know, it's all new in that. I've seen what other people are doing and what we've done a little bit, but there hasn't been enough testing of it to know what works and what doesn't. You know?
Right, exactly. No, I get it. Yeah, it'll be an interesting year for all of us.
Yeah, it will be. I hope we get to play. I really do.
Yeah. Yeah, fingers crossed for sure. Coach, I think that's all I got for you today. Thank you so much for spending time with us on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
It was my privilege. It's always fun to talk about basketball, and we haven't been able to do that enough this year. So this was really fun for me.
If you have any follow-up questions or want to get a hold of Coach McWilliams, you can find his contact information in the episode description. We hope you'll join us next time here on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Until then, coach them up.
Thank you for listening to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Is there a coach you'd like to hear from or a topic you'd like to hear us discuss? You can write us a message on the Anchor website or send us an email at OregonBasketballCoaches@gmail.com. You can also subscribe to this podcast on Spotify.